Good evening, everyone, and hello. You're listening to Revision Media at revisionmedia.org. Today is Wednesday, September 18, 2019. I'm your host, Richard Carey, and this is Arcane Semantics. Well, this airing, I have a very special guest with us. One Max Egan is here joining us, folks. Max has been active in the independent media and truth movement for the past decade. Max founded the Full Circle Project in 2012, which has evolved into a focus on building community resilience in every location possible and to find effective remedy to issue the concerns at the local level, something which Max has been advocating for regularly on his podcasts for over 8 years. Max is the webmaster of thecrowhouse.com and regularly contributes at various speaking engagements across the globe. But without further ado, Max Egan. Hello, Max.
Hey, Richard, nice to be on the show again, brother. Nice to come and talk to you. Thanks for asking me on.
Oh, thank you, Max. It's an honor to have you here, sir. I spoke to you last a couple of years ago. I was on Truthcat Radio at the time, and I had you on my show Beyond the Matrix there. Kind of similar to a lot of the sort of topics that you delve into. And well, for those who aren't familiar, sir, it is an honor. You have been active and very well received by the truth community for a lot of years now. I mean, many certainly look up to you and admire you and your work. Now, you're based in Australia. You've always lived in Australia, is that correct?
Yeah, I've always lived in Australia. I'm actually in Los Angeles at the moment, but my home base is Australia, yeah.
Right. Oh, yes. You're regularly all over the globe, the U.S., across Europe in speaking and engagements. And I know at times you've been in South America. I mean, I remember for some interviews I'd be listening to you with jungle sounds in the background. And it's really impressive how much you get around.
Yeah, look, it happens. I really like it in Peru. Actually, I'm planning on going back there next year just because I've got some stuff there. I kind of generally spend about 6 months of the year there if I can. It's actually a lot cheaper to live there than anywhere else, so it's a good reason to be there. But, it is interesting doing a radio show from all different locations. You get an interesting array of background sounds, that's for sure.
Definitely. And your activism and, well, just your notoriety, I mean, you've pretty much, it's fair to say, have gone viral over the years, where I'm sure you're in demand at a lot of speaking engagements, and you're certainly willing to travel to the hot spots. I mean, you've been in Gaza, from what I understand. I think I recall a video where you were speaking with Ken O'Keefe on location there, isn't that right?
Yeah, we went into Gaza in 2012. That was an incredibly amazing experience. It was a real turning point in my life, really. Like, it was just so interesting to go in there and see what the situation is like on the ground, you know, without hearing it on the, you know, we hear one thing on the news and we hear all sorts of stories. But to go there and see it, it was almost surreal. And, I do a lot of stuff like that, and I do get around a lot. I mean, I'm kind of starting to wind it down a little bit now. The travel kind of gets to you. I think air travel should come with a health warning, to be honest. And I've done so much traveling in the last, like, 10 years that I'm starting to wind it down a little bit now. I've got some dates to do. I just spoke in Philadelphia last weekend, and I've got to speak in Mount Shasta the following weekend, next week on the 27th. And then I've got a couple of speaking dates in Australia. And then I've got a few more dates next year. But then I might kind of wind it down a little bit from there, I think. It's sort of getting over the miles a little bit.
Definitely. It's good to recuperate and recharge. I was noticing something that rather surprised me on your YouTube channel. Earlier, I noticed this video pointing out you had been badly beaten by Israelis when in Australia. You were assaulted.
Yeah, this was oh, I don't know, probably 2 or 3 years ago that this happened. Mm-hmm. After a speaking engagement that I did. But I mean, yeah, it just goes with the territory, you know. I mean, this is why I even do so many speaking dates, because it's just, you know, it gets the word out. It's good to go and meet people and get them to see that you're actually real, you know. You're not, you know, some agent or you know, it's not pretentious what you're doing. You just, the way that you appear on the radio, that's just who you are. It's really good for people to see that. So I try to go and interact with people as much as I can just to get the word out, because, you know, we're in some pretty dire straits as a species, and, you know, people have to participate. I think we could change the world very easily if people would simply participate. So I try to lead by example in what I do. But, yeah, after a talk in Byron Bay in Australia, there was a heckler there in the audience, someone who came to, you know, interrupt the presentation, and really couldn't interrupt it enough, and so went out into the foyer and started handing out pro-Israeli flyers to everybody. And then I got jumped after the conference and sort of bashed up a bit and a couple of cracked ribs. I mean, nothing too serious, but, you know, just a bit of a warning that I should be careful about what I speak about. But it didn't slow me down, it didn't stop me. I actually went back to the conference the next day and decided that I'd speak louder, if anything. So, you know, I don't do fear very well. But, yeah, I mean, it just goes with the territory. I get a lot of that. I don't get beaten up a lot, but I get a lot of threats of beatings. I get a lot of threats, death threats and all sorts of stuff. So that's just the way it goes, you know, when you join this path of activism. I mean, it certainly isn't something you do as a career choice. You know, we do this because it needs to be done. But it's not a pleasant path, and you've got to have pretty thick skin to do it.
Right. And certainly someone like yourself, who's had quite a strong response from the public. I mean, you have a lot of listeners and regulars to your broadcasts, and you keep up with what you're doing. So, I mean, you're certainly more likely to be targeted than someone who's a bit less known. But really, the social engineering has disturbed me lately, because not enough people get involved, Max. It seems all of the relatively normal people are just sitting back and watching, and things are getting more and more extreme. I mean, it seems like we're headed for a totalitarian future if things don't change much. I don't know. Some have pointed out that Australia's been one of the places where this has been a focus much in advance of a lot of the Western world, kind of the way Sweden and Denmark have such social engineering and almost used as testing ground for things to come. We have that a bit in Los Angeles, California, in the U.S., but I understand China has been invested quite a bit in Australia, and it does seem like a place where the New World Order is really trying to implement a lot of social engineering. I don't know, how would you comment on different parts of the world, and Australia in particular?
Oh, yeah, look, absolutely. And China owns a lot of land in Australia. We've been, as you say, we've been making pretty close ties to China. The main city that China trades with in Australia is Darwin, and Darwin is becoming Australia's first smart city, which is based on the Chinese model. So you can see where it's all going. Yeah, I mean, very, very totalitarian what they're doing there. They're just banning cash transactions or anything over $10,000 as well. They want to push that through. So they're really trying to push for a cashless society. And if it goes cashless, then it's all over. That's it. They've got you locked into the grid. You know, we can't let them do that. It'll be the end of society as we know it if they manage to do that. And that's how they're doing it with everything, you know, all the gun rights and all the stuff that you've got in the United States here. If they can manage to push you into a cashless situation, then it won't matter, because people's purchasing power will be limited by their social profile. An interesting thing, when I got my ESTA, like my visa to come into the United States this time, In applying for it, they wanted to know my social profile. They wanted to know my social pages, my social media pages. I told them I didn't have any. I mean, it's an optional answer. You don't have to answer it. If you're coming from some countries in Europe and some other countries, it's not an optional answer. It's only because I was coming from Australia. So it shows that they're kind of slipping it in the United States as well. But they trial it in other countries. And as people from the United States go and interact with other countries, then it starts to come in here. You know, the facial recognition that I've got here in airports now, this is something that we've got in Australia and they're doing it here. So I can come in with my Australian passport and walk straight up to the facial recognition thing and get through. Now, that's the only way I can leave the country in Australia, because there's no other option. You have to do that or you can't leave. Simple as that. And they're doing it here in the United States. And of course, they've got it set up so all the people coming from, like, my country can just walk straight through customs and everybody else sees it and they think, well, that's great. We want to get that as well. So it makes it attractive to them. So that's social engineering right there. You know, but it's on all levels. And the Australian people, they're just programmed into doing whatever the government wants them to do. It's a very, very controlled country. You know, the land of the free, they call it, but it's really not. You know, the lucky country is the one that we get. That's the modicum that they give it. But it's not the lucky country. It's just a country that's very, very programmed, one of the most unfree countries on earth. It just looks free on the surface. You've got plenty of space, plenty of freedom of choice, but if you try to think outside the box or do anything that the government doesn't like, they sweep on you pretty quickly. You got no way of defending yourself in Australia as well, self-defense. If anyone attacks you, you're supposed to call the police. You're not supposed to defend yourself, which I think is completely ridiculous.
Yes, that does sound pretty ridiculous. And, well, eventually, if all transactions are cashless, this leads me to believe that people will be denied food, even, if they go against the program. What they want you to think, what websites they want you to visit, how they want you to behave and speak on social media. It does seem very alarming. And I know airports are already a strong target. In China, I understand a huge number of people are being denied flights, even on the train, all based on their social credit score. Eventually, they'll take it all the way to food, I think. That's the end game. You can't even eat if you go against the system.
Well, yeah, I mean, you'll be able to get certain foods, but you won't be able to get high-quality foods, you know, and they're doing it with everything. I mean, they can bring in that type of security that they're doing at airports in, you know, government buildings and all sorts of stuff just through these staged terror attacks they do. And this is where they get people, you know. They just put checkpoints everywhere so that, you know, they can locate any persons of interest. And it's getting to the point where everything's going to be on your cell phone. So, you know, when you go through one of these checkpoints, they're not going to ask for your papers. They're going to ask to see your cell phone. They're going to be able to punch in a code and it's going to have your entire social profile on it for them to see. They'll be able to see who you are, what you've been posting on Facebook for the last 10 years, what sort of stuff you've been involved in, what sort of information you've been spreading. And they can put you in category A or category B, you know, either a desirable or an undesirable. It's as simple as that. So that's the way they'll do it. I mean, they can do it with these terror attacks. I mean, at the moment, an airport is one of the easiest places in the world to disappear if you're an activist. You know, someone like me, someone like David Icke, someone like yourself, just flying from here to England. You know, as soon as you get into that international zone in the airports, you can be, any government can come and grab you and carry out a rendition program. Anyone could come. You know, the French government, the United States government, the British government, the Russian government, anybody can take you from an international airport, take you wherever they want. It's got nothing to do with the local authorities. It's one of the most dangerous places. So when it gets to the point that we've got these checkpoints just to get into government buildings, just to get into schools, just to get into banks, to get into just supermarkets, it'll eventually, you know, if they stage a few of these terror attacks in supermarkets, then eventually you're going to need a QR code and some sort of security screen simply to go to Walmart. So, you know, that's the way it's going. And when you go through those little security screens to go into Walmart to do your shopping or whatever, well, they can go, oh, that's Richard Carey. That's that guy who's got that radio show. We want to have a chat to him. So we'll just pull him aside as he's walking into the supermarket and we'll call the authorities who will come and take you away for questioning. I mean, that's the way it will be. That's the way it's going to go. That's how they can squeeze everybody out. And all they've got to do is make it all cashless for that to happen. This is why they're pushing for it so much. And, of course, that's why they need 5G to have the bandwidth to be able to do all this, to have all of this massive amount of transactions all happening at once. Yeah, and there's been a lot of fear-mongering with the whole 5G thing as well. A lot of people saying how sick everybody's going to get as soon as they turn it on. You know, it's completely ridiculous. So, you know, I mean, sure, it's there's health aspects to it. There's, you know, it is damaging to our health. All electromagnetic radiation is damaging to our health. But there's been a certain amount of people pushing this whole, you know, extinction event that's going to happen when 5G is switched on, you know. And when that doesn't happen, a lot of people are just going to throw the baby out with the bathwater and say, well, this so-called truth movement doesn't know what they're saying. And they'll lapse back into a state of complacency. And they can start turning up the heat a little bit more the way they always do.
I have my own station now, as opposed to just a show with the other platforms. So I have a few other hosts on here as well. And I don't think I'd even want to be at an airport in Europe already. I might be on a list or something. But you're mentioning that the 5G is more about spying on us for all the data collection and for the social engineering and the social credit score. Is that what you'd say 5G is primarily about? You don't believe that 5G is the big health danger? It's that it's all that much different than 4G, the way a lot of people are hearing reports of? You think that's propaganda?
Well, no, I think it does have a lot of health dangers, and it does have a lot of there is a lot of health issues with it. But a lot of people think that when they switch it on, it's going to be this big extinction event, and that's not going to happen. It's not a big extinction event. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's dangerous in as much as it's millimeter waves. It's very high frequency stuff. They can target people with it because it's targeted waves. So, you know, it's not good for you. But there's been this whole push that, as soon as they turn it on, everybody's going to get sick, everybody's going to get cancer, they can boil our blood, all sorts of stuff, you know. Like, people are expecting to just, you know, they're going to put all these towers in place and microwave the city or something, you know. It's right. Really, you know, being pushed to the extreme. I mean, sure, there are health dangers with it, and there's a lot of stuff they can do with it which is very bad, you know, mind control, all sorts of stuff if you go and read the DARPA patents. But what it's mainly about is surveillance, and I would suggest even interfering with the human emotions. They're very, very capable of doing this with 5G. It's all in the DARPA patents again, you know, mind control, this sort of stuff, mood swings, affecting the moods of large sections of population through 5G carrier waves. So there's all that aspect to it, all that side of it. But I do think there's been a lot of fear-mongering and hype in regard to the health aspects. That's what it's mainly about is all of that sort of stuff, is the social credit scores and the fact, the IoT, all the stuff that they're going to be running from it. I mean, sure, they can use it to target people. They can use it to make people sick. They can use it to disable people. There's all sorts of stuff they can do it. All you've got to do is go and look at the DARPA patents. That's the way it is. But, you know, mainly what it's about is social crediting. What it's mainly about is the Internet of Things, the IoT, this whole cashless grid they want to put in place. That's the main purpose of it, absolutely.
We were talking about Australia, even China having a lot of investments there, and how it is a very strong center for this New World Order and all the social engineering. The totalitarian sort of future, you know, that we could look forward to if things continue as they are. You talk about corporatism a lot as well, much of why we need local resistance, communities that are self-sustaining, because these mega corporations are just completely losing their humanity, and they have more control than governments already at this date.
Oh, absolutely. And this is something that I've been saying for years, you know, getting as sustainable as you can is really one of the keys to getting out of this mess, because, you know, that's really how they control you, by keeping you in a state of scarcity, in a state of shortage. If you didn't have to pay for food, and you have to pay for a roof over your head, if you have to pay for energy, then we wouldn't have any of this happening, you know. So it's an important thing, you know. The more food you can gather for yourself and grow for yourself, the more free you become from the system. You know, I've been encouraging permaculture for years. You know, imagine what it would be like if all of our cities were permaculture cities. What they did in Cuba, it was an incredible feat that they did in Cuba. You know, when they had all these sanctions happening and they were told all the food trucks were stopped, we've got 6 weeks and we're going to be out of food. And so they turned the whole place into a food forest. I mean, this is the way all of our cities should be. Imagine if LA was a food forest, there wouldn't be all this homeless situation. People would have far more money in the bank. They'd have far more wealth to do all the things they want to do if they didn't have to buy food. So it's a huge thing. And I was encouraging this for like 10 years ago. I was telling people that they need to grow gardens and get in touch with their neighbors and build the strongest connections they can with the people around them, just so that when a situation like what we're seeing now unfolded, they actually have the support of the community around them. You know, your community is the most valuable resource that we have if we can just break down the barriers with these people. So, yeah, it's been something that I've been promoting for a very long time, and it would be hugely beneficial if people had done it. You know, it's getting to the point now people are a little scared to, you know, connect with people around them. But, you know, I guess, you know, the further their backs get pushed to the wall, well, eventually they will, because we do respond well in times of crisis, and I think we are certainly heading for a time of crisis, albeit a manufactured crisis, you know.
Yes, I do agree. People need to start networking more locally in their community and growing their own food. I'd even say being aware of natural plant medicines, alternatives to the pharmaceutical industrial complex, which is only out for a profit. And of course, those synthetic molecules, your body doesn't even know what to do with them. You know, we haven't evolved for so long. I know you're a large advocate of natural plant medicines as well. We have Jared Daniel from the station here. Hello, Jared.
Yeah, it's good to be here. This is Jared Daniel from Bloodline Frontline. You know, I want to bring up on something that he said about these checkpoints and stuff. Are you familiar with the federal ID law going to effect 2020?
No. What are the changes with it?
Here in the United States, about last year, I went to get my driver's license, and they said, are you getting your driver's license or your federal ID? And I said, well, I just need a driver's license. And they say, well, you also need a federal ID. And they were telling me they're coming out with a new ID, and it goes into effect. It'll be mandatory next year, 2020. You have to go to the DMV, and you have to take your birth certificate, Social Security card, you know, all that, passport ID, and you have to get what's called a federal ID to get into, say, a courthouse, or right, to even get on the airport, or even get on a bus. Right. It'll be to where not only will you have to have a passport, but even to fly within the United States from one state, say, New York to Florida.
That's interesting. That's exactly what I was talking about. So they're bringing it in already.
And say, like, you get arrested and you have to go to court, you will have to have that federal ID to get into the courtroom. And it goes into effect. It will be 100% compliant sometime in the middle of next year, 2020. The law's already been passed. They're just setting it up to get it compliant. And it will be run through the DMV. And you will need it to get into any federal building in the United States, and you'll need it to get on any kind of airport, even if you've got your driver's license and your passports. You're okay. Still going to need okay. That federal ID. Yes.
So this is what they're doing in China as well. They've got a similar sort of thing in China. If you even go to China now, you've got to be part of the system. You've got to be in the grid. So even as a visitor, you get pulled into their grid. So this is the way they'll do it in the United States. And this is, if you tie that in with the new red flag and screening laws they want to bring in for gun restriction and all that sort of stuff, you can see where they're going with it. I mean, it's the same. The same as what they're doing in Australia, the same as what they're doing in China. It's just a different method to do it. And when you look at how they've disarmed the people in Australia, to do that in the United States, you'd never get the people to buy it. So they need to do something like this federal ID and these red flag laws and make conspiracy theorists, you know, people who do the work that we do, look like we're all potential terrorists, to have the rest of society support the disarming of this side of society. And, you know, the conspiracy side of society seem to be the only ones who really care about the Second Amendment anyway. So that's the way they'll do it. You know, it's just different methods, different strokes for different folks. So it's the same plan. It's just different ways of implementing it in different countries, depending on the culture that you're dealing with. But with the introduction of what Jared's talking about, we can see exactly the same thing as what they've got in China. And what they're rolling out in Australia being rolled out here, exactly the same. Just, as I said, a different methodology in order to put it into place.
We also have a regular listener to the station, Johnny Ceballos, out of Texas. He's a young aspiring journalist himself. Johnny, did you have a question for Max Egan here about these topics?
I appreciate that, Richard. I was very interested in the two topics that he was covering off the bat. The federal RFID chip ID identification, as well as our communities coming together. I was curious as to if he was familiar with aquaponics by chance.
Yeah, wonderful stuff. Wonderful stuff. I mean, all that sort of stuff is great. That goes hand in hand with permaculture. It's a great thing. There's actually a group in Peru that's doing aquaponics and have some really good success with it.
Yes. Would you believe that that would be the future for every society? I believe for a long time I've been a proponent when I used to live in Washington State. I used to work with this kind of stuff. I just see an abundance for the future of this. As you mentioned before, you said we could start having small communities farming off their own land, just small acreage, just a quarter acre of land could provide for a family of 12 or a community of 20 or so, if you do it right.
Well, yeah, I mean, absolutely. And the fact that we're not doing this with our community shows just how corrupt the system is. I mean, we all know how well permaculture works. There's no reason why LA should look the way it does today. There's no reason why anybody should be going shortage in any state of food. In any place in this country or in any country, there's no reason for it at all. You know, it's all bad management that's done by design. So, yeah, I mean, do I believe it's the future? I mean, I don't believe anything, but it certainly wouldn't hurt doing that sort of thing. And I think we just should do it. People should just start doing these things and implementing these sorts of things in their societies. You know, I think it's far easier to get forgiveness than permission. So just do it and, you know, show people that it works. And it can't hurt. It certainly can't hurt. And it would be far better than what we're doing. But like I said, you know, the fact that we're not doing any of this stuff just shows how corrupt the government is. I mean, the government gets what the government pays for, the education system, the food that people are eating, the state of these societies. You know, the amount of money the government's got that they spend on warfare and all of the bad stuff they do, mining, all sorts of stuff. I mean, you know, they could fix the world up very, very quickly. Spend one-tenth of the money that the military spends every year on just fixing up these cities and the places in the United States and dealing with the homeless situation, you'd heal the world very, very quickly, but they won't do it. So it kind of shows us that it's all done by design. And, you know, whatever the future is, I don't think we're going to get any joy from this current political system or this current crop of politicians. I think that people need to realize that they're, you know, it's a puppet show. The politicians just manufacture all of these situations to keep us thinking that, you know, we can't do any good and we can't make any change and we've always got to be scared of the other guy. And it's about time we got rid of these people. And I think anarchy is the way to go, but how do we get there? You know, you've got to, you know, get people back to a point where they're capable of self-governance. And that's going to be a bit of a slow process as well. So, you know, I mean, all sorts of things like this help. At least making people become aware of them helps as well. But that's the thing with permaculture and aquaponics and all of this sort of stuff, aquaponics, is that it's the same as earth ships and cob housing and all the stuff that we know we can do. We go and learn it. We do the workshops. We know it's all happening. And then you go and try to do it, and the government won't let you. So that's the problem, you know. We need to deal with that.
We were talking about the 5G and data collection, the corporatism, growing your own food as a local resistance example. Perhaps this would be a good point to describe the Full Circle project. I mean, are you still trying to promote that?
Well, look, I have been, but it's up to people to promote it themselves. It's up to people to get involved themselves is the problem. You know, with Full Circle, even I've found that even with Full Circle, what we've tried to do with that is provide a mechanism whereby people can create these support groups and these local, you know, action groups on the ground in their own community. But very often people just join Full Circle and they sit there and they wait for the newsletter to tell them that the world's changed and it's safe for them to go outside now. You know, that's unfortunately the problem, is that people, you know, they join these groups, but they don't really get motivated into action. And we need people to get motivated into action. You know, it's probably a little bit unnerving for people, the fact that it's actually a hands-on, on-the-ground action group. You know, it's not about social media. It's not about clicktivism. It's not about sitting there and posting their positive thoughts to each other online. You know, like a chat forum or Facebook or whatever. It's about organizing people in your own community to go out and get involved. And unfortunately, not a lot of people want to do that. You know, like I said, a lot of people want the world to change, but they don't want to change themselves. And so that's the problem. And that's what Full Circle has been attempting to do, just encourage that spark of change in people and that spark of motivation in people, to let them see that there is a support group around them. You know, if you join Full Circle Group and you reach out, you're going to find there's people in your community that have the same thoughts and hopes and fears that you do. And just knowing these people, getting to know them, it creates a support mechanism for you. And people need that. I mean, I've met so many people who say, you know, do you know anyone in my town that I can talk to? Because I'm awake and I don't know anyone else who is. And so that's what I tried to do with Full Circle. But, you know, it's up to the people to use it themselves. You know, I kind of created it and stepped away from it because it's important that people don't see me as a leader of the group, because if they're going to sit there and just wait for the newsletter from the leader, then, you know, they're never going to get anywhere. They're missing the whole point of what the group's about. It's about motivating people into action on the ground where you live and giving you the tools that you need in order to connect with these people. So, I mean, it's there, and people do use it, and I've met a few groups. I've met groups in England. I've met groups in Perth. I've met groups in a few countries that have all gotten together, and they all met each other through Full Circle. So, you know, it is working to a degree. I wish it was working more, but that's going to depend on how much people actually want to be involved in being the change that they want to see in the world, you know?
Right. Yes. A lot of people are far more comfortable with the keyboard warrior activism. And I must admit, I don't go out and interact in person myself. I'm caught up in this radio station thing now. But I'm at least helping a lot of people to network. And it seems like a good service I can provide. But definitely, I mean, if you don't know anyone in your community, once there are problems, once things can get into a dire state around you, you won't really know where to turn, and everyone will be fighting with each other far more likely than if you actually were mostly acquainted with one another. And these big cities just make it even worse.
Yeah, well, this is something that I've been promoting for years, brother, is the power of community. You know, put common unity back in community. But that's what they've done with cities. You know, when they pack you into a city, then you become further, you become more separated from the people around you, because all the people around you are encroaching on your personal space. You can't have any real space of your own. You've got someone living within 10 or 12 feet of you, even if there's a wall or a fence or whatever in the way. You know, there's someone 10 or 15, 20 feet away from you. So, you know, we don't have this freedom of movement. We don't have this freedom to relax and to have our space and our domain, and, you know, to be able to sit there and just walk around and not have to see somebody else if we don't want to. We don't have any of that. So that's the problem with cities. You'll find people in the country who might live, you know, half a mile away from the nearest neighbor, but they know each other and they get on fine and they know when, you know, they keep an eye on each other's place for each other and all sorts of stuff. So in the city, you know, the closer you pack people together, the less they want to see each other. You get people living in a high-rise building, sometimes they're too scared to go outside because they hear someone else has opened the hall. They don't even want to be in the same corridor as another person, you know, because they're just scared of their neighbors being so close to them, living in such close proximity. It just does these things, you know. The further you pack people in, the more separated they become. It's a remarkable thing, remarkable part of human nature. But that's what cities are all about, and designed to separate people by packing them too close than what they should be, you know.
Yes, I am guilty of it myself. I'm in a mega city. I'm in Chicago, where I've lived my whole life. I was just born here, and I do mean to get to a more rural area, at least something that's a bit more spaced out as far as the population as I get a bit older. But I'm in my early 40s now. I have time, but I've spent far too much time in a big city. I don't want to seem like a hypocrite, but definitely this face-to-face sort of work is even harder. I mean, people find it a little more, I don't know, just exciting and less effort to be a truther online. But when it comes to actually interacting with people in your community and getting to know them, establish real relationships, friendships, well, that makes them, I guess, really scrutinize and self-reflect more than they want in a lot of cases.
Yeah, it does. It does. Yeah, and we need that. We need that. You know, but yeah, I mean, we're in some pretty dire situations. It's extremely difficult to get the word out to people, and a lot of that is because we've been packed into these cities and packed into these situations. Like I said, you know, you just get further and further separated from the people around you. And another way they've done it is by, like, even through the internet and giving everybody a soapbox. If you give everybody a soapbox, then nobody gets heard. You know, the ones who've really got the real message and they can't get their voices heard above the cacophony. Everybody wants to throw their 2 cents worth in. So that's been a huge divide and conquer strategy as well. You know, it's always presented as being the opposite of what it is. It's presented as being unity, you know. Something that will unify us all, you know. Give everyone a MySpace and an Instagram and this and that. But suddenly it becomes about the people who look the nicest or sound the nicest or whatever. It doesn't become about real information. And as I said, you give everybody a soapbox so nobody gets heard. They're very clever the way they do this. But we have been so controlled and so led to this point. And we really are at a turning point. This is why I think everything's snowballing so much at the moment. Because, you know, we're going to go one way or the other. Either the wheels are going to fall off the system completely and it's going to implode, or we're going to move straight into this smart grid. And it's all about the choices that we make and whether people can be, you know, coaxed into noticing what's actually going on around them. Because a lot of people just don't notice is the unfortunate part. A lot of the kids don't notice because they have no reference point for what freedom looked like. And, you know, I mean, nobody has any real reference point for what freedom looks like because in regard to the human experiment, freedom itself has no history because we have never had freedom in the world. But it's an interesting concept anyway. But we have had modicums of freedom. We have had at least more freedom than we've got now. But the kids growing up into what we've got now and haven't seen that. So, you know, and a lot of them just don't notice. They're too locked into the smart tech anyway. They're locked into the grid. And the tech is taking all their skills away from them, unfortunately. And you know, when you don't use things, they become atrophied. You know, if you don't walk around and don't lose your legs, you know, they become atrophied. Your muscles become atrophied if you don't use them. And it's the same with your brain. If you don't use it, it becomes atrophied. You forget how to think properly. And that's what's happening as well. So we've got to be very, very careful about where we're going and, you know, pay attention to what's happening to our kids. We really do.
Yes. And for that matter, I mean, they're getting so terrorized now. So many of these shooting incidents, it seems clear upon closer scrutiny, are being engineered, staged, are not what they seem. Even if in a good number of them, there are actual killings. I mean, this does nonetheless seem part of a social engineering project. But on that note you mentioned, I would also like to touch on this sexualization of the children that we're getting bombarded with now. But on the shooting topic first, I noticed you had done some coverage looking into, for example, the Christchurch shooting in New Zealand. I don't know what you think the agenda, if there are many motives with most of these incidents or one in particular, but the gun agenda does seem to be at least one of the motives. I mean, they already had pretty strict gun laws there. I mean, you can't own guns to much of any extent in Australia. I mean, even more so, but New Zealand and Australia are pretty on par with one another. Is that right?
Well, yes and no. I mean, they had reasonably open gun laws in New Zealand up till this point when the shooting was staged. But it was about the gun laws. It was also about censorship, about attacking the independent media and bringing in all the censorship, shutting down YouTube the way they've done. You know, we've seen a huge purge on YouTube since that shooting happened. And, you know, all they had to do was stage a couple of fake ones like Boston bombing and Sandy Hook and a few things that were obviously fake. And people started, you know, thinking everything is fake. And you got to understand that the ones who are running the things, they think several moves ahead. And they really wanted everyone to push the whole Christchurch was fake meme. But a lot of it was damage control. It was very sloppy the way they pushed the fake meme out, because a lot of the claims that were being made simply aren't supported by the video. And that's what made me look a little bit deeper on the video. And notice the extra players. I mean, the guy in red standing there when the last woman is shot, the car that leaves halfway through, which we see wave through a police roadblock later in the day. I mean, they really blew it with this video. They got all the extra players. That's why the video was banned. It's not because everyone will know it's fake and CGI, because it really doesn't appear to be fake and CGI. What it does, though, is it completely blows the official story out of the window without the need for any debate about fakery or anything like that. You know, the Christchurch shooters video is a gift to us if people would have really got some focus on what it's actually showing them, because it would have brought down the New Zealand government and it would expose the entire world media as being the liars that they are, because it's all there on the video. And none of the points that are relevant on the video have been addressed by anybody in the mainstream at all. And unfortunately, not many of the truth movement has addressed them either. You know, and even the whole truth movement. I mean, even the term, the truth movement, I would suggest this is a loaded term, because it shouldn't even be called the truth movement, because what is the truth? The truth is something we're searching for. And if you look at things like Christchurch, you look at some of these false shootings, some of the real shootings and some of the false flags and some of the stuff we research, well, the truth, in inverted commas, appears to be pretty subjective depending on what people want to believe is true. And I would suggest that we'll never know what the real truth is regarding just about anything until we've established the freedom to find out, the freedom to put all these rabbit holes down and open all these doorways that have kept the real information from us. So what this really should be is a freedom movement, because that's what this is about. I mean, what do we want the truth for? What are we going to do with it when we find whatever this truth is that we're apparently looking for? What do we intend to do with it? Like put a little box and tie a little ribbon on it and send it to someone? I mean, what are we going to do with it? Okay, we've got the truth now. Now what? How does the world change now that we know the truth, whatever that is? Now, because what this is about is freedom. And that's what it's always been about. And anything that gets in the way of that is unacceptable. And the so-called truth, as I said, appears to be pretty subjective. And the word truth has almost been weaponized against the movement of freedom. And that's what this is. It isn't a truth movement. It's a resistance against tyranny. It's a resistance against the massive disinformation and slavery system that's being pushed on us, and to get us to a point where we'll know what the truth is. But at the moment, nobody knows what the truth is, and unfortunately, nobody's prepared to admit that. Everyone wants to be an authority on everything, you know. And Christchurch offered us a huge opportunity that I think was squandered, you know. Because frankly, I mean, I haven't seen any other shooter's video, I haven't seen any other false flag shooting, and most of them, I mean, if not all of them, are false flags. Whether people die or not, they're still false flags. But I haven't seen any other one that gave us the information that video gave us, that actually exposed the extra players right there on film was a huge opportunity that we squandered. And you know, I actually lost a lot of faith in the resistance over the squandering of that video. It really made me see that not too many people out there really want freedom. They enjoy the Nantucket sleigh ride that they're on. They enjoy the roller coaster ride. They enjoy the spy novel version of reality. They like the popularity contest they're involved in. They like to go for the more romantic, you know, narrative, whatever it is that appeals to their, you know, sense of spookiness or whatever. They're not really interested in the truth. They're not really interested in freedom. You know, not anything that involves more than opening an email and getting the newsletter to telling them that it's safe to go outside. They don't really want to have to do it themselves. So, unfortunately, that's what I've seen with Christchurch. I think it was a huge opportunity that was lost. But, hey, that's the way we go. And I've got a huge amount of attacks for even suggesting it. That's why I've got so many trolls now. That's why my videos have been deleted and the view count's being dropped back again. People have been deleted from my channel. Subscribers have been deleted all the time. And I've got waves upon waves of trolls attacking me, saying I'm a deep state mole or whatever because I don't support the concept that it was all a hoax, you know. Well, what I'm saying is the government did it. We can prove it by the video. So somehow that means I'm working for the government. Go figure that one out.
Ridiculous. I really like how you critique the phrase truth movement, because that is an excellent point. It really is a freedom movement, but they wouldn't even want us using that term. So it may have been an engineered term, because we want freedom if we don't think we already have it. The way we're conditioned, we're led to believe we're already free. And that is a grand deception, I would add.
And what is the truth movement? And what is the truth, you know, the truth, this big word that we have, the truth, in capital letters carved in stone 100 feet tall, you know? Like, what is that? What does it even look like? Do you know? Does anybody know? I mean, and people may have their own little personal truths, and there may be some little particular truth that they've found which is indeed true. And there may be someone else who has their particular truth, which is indeed true, but they may be two different truths about two different things, but both people view their particular truth as being the be-all and end-all, the most important thing in existence, and so they fight over other people and fight with other people over their own personal truths, who may also be completely right. So, you know, we've got to step back and put things in perspective and realize that it's a loaded term. It's been put there to prevent freedom from being happened. And I actually put out a show recently called The Weaponization of Truth Against Freedom. And that's what's happened. You know, it's been weaponized. We're just sitting there arguing with each other, trying to promote our own particular version of the truth, rather than realizing that the only reason we don't know and we're arguing about it is because we're not free. And that's what it's about. That's what it should always have been about, because once we do establish freedom, all the doorways will be open. You won't have to argue what the truth is. It'll become self-evident.
That's a very apt way to put it. And, I mean, now we even have organizations organized such as Antifa, who think they're fighting for freedom and the ability to do what you want, when they're actually doing the exact opposite of repressing different points of view, freedom of speech. And it's amazing how people can be deceived. You think that the Christchurch incident, well, it was specifically engineered to have an effect to make every incident be questioned, even if there were some real ones in there, to sort of.
I think that's what.
Dollar. Yeah.
I think that's what Sandy Hook and the Boston bombing was all about. To make it seem like everything's a hoax. They made some of them so obviously hoaxes. I mean, you know, Boston bombing, people were calling that before it was even over. You know, and Sandy Hook, you could see that this was a farce. There was nothing going on there that we were told was going on. So, yeah, I mean, I think they do this on purpose, and they made it so obvious. I mean, even the ads for crisis actors and all of this sort of stuff that you see, why do these places exist? Why do these ads exist? They wouldn't be there if they didn't want us to see them, you know. So they want people to think that all this is a hoax. You know, they think several moves ahead. And all they have to do is stage a couple and make them hoaxes, make them obviously hoaxes, for everyone to buy into this hook, line, and sinker. And then they just go and kill a bunch of people, a bunch of real people. It's a lot easier to just go and kill people. You get the same result. It's all about the legislation anyway. And it isn't like they actually care whether they kill people or not, you know. So then you get, you know, something like Christchurch, you get people, you know, sending hate mail to the victims' families and all sorts of stuff. So amongst the people in the mainstream hate the independent media. They see us as all just a bunch of conspiracy theorists who say everything's a hoax, nobody ever dies. You know, they'll typically be putting out information saying World War II is a hoax soon, you watch. So, you know, it's got to that point. So you've got to see what the play is. How do you get the people in the mainstream to turn against the very people who are trying to wake them up, like us? You've got to make us look like a bunch of deranged, heartless conspiracy theorists who think everything is a conspiracy, nobody ever dies, the earth is flat, all sorts of crazy stuff. You know, the most bizarre things you can think of, just to get the people in the mainstream to not want to listen to what we're saying. You know, this is how counterintelligence works, you know, classic COINTEL. Poison the well, throw the baby out with the bathwater. And that's what they're doing, and that's what that's how they staged it. Now, I think they put on Boston bombing and Sandy Hook simply to do this, simply to get this meme rolling in people's minds. And then you've got certain elements within the independent media who will always push this. I mean, there were elements within the independent media who were coming out and saying Christchurch was a hoax, it was all CGI shell casings and, you know, crisis actors and, you know, fake victims and all sorts of stuff. Within 3 hours of the event happening, they were saying this. And this was damage control because of what the video actually showed you. I mean, what other video is there anywhere where you can get 10 to 15 years jail for watching the video? It's crazy, you know. So that's not because it's so easy to tell that it was a hoax and it was all fake. No, it's not. That's not the reason at all. The reason is because it shows the government was involved. It clearly shows the government was involved. And all this stuff was damage control. But I think I don't know how they blew it so badly, whether they didn't mean him to film it or whether he turned the camera on too early or what it is, why they let him get away with it, why it got out there. But, you know, it's a huge gift to us because it shows the extra players. Like I said, shows this car being waved through the police roadblock. It shows the official story is a complete crock. And you don't need to be conspiratorial about it. You don't need to prove anything. It's all right there on the video, you know. Well, if this was a single shooter, well, then who are these people? Simple as that. Just that one question. And the whole official narrative falls down. And they don't want you to see that. They don't want anything like that. So you've got to wonder how on earth this video got filmed to begin with.
That makes me think of what I was trying to stress on the 9/11 anniversary. Since we didn't wind up discussing that event, that incident, which, well, I would call an operation on its anniversary this year, but implicating that the establishment was in on it, a good percentage of them were in on it, were put in place in advance. I think that is some of the most important information to focus on for that as well. So, yeah, I definitely agree with what you point out about the Christchurch shooting. I mean, surely you could see with 9/11, that is just about the most important issue, delegitimizing our government with this information.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And it was a complete setup, you know. But again, I mean, we were making a reasonable amount of headway in trying to wake people up to what was going on with 9/11. And again, that got infiltrated. Suddenly people started arguing over the details, you know, which is what people have been doing with Christchurch. What they do with a lot of these shootings, they start arguing over the details. And you can't possibly know the details. You're not there. It could be any number of them. You could be right on all counts. You know, we were getting somewhere with 9/11, and then people started arguing over whether it was thermite that brought the buildings down. Because yeah, that was the question. Well, if it wasn't the plane that brought the buildings down, then what was it? We shouldn't even be asking that question because we don't know what it was and it doesn't matter what it was. What matters is the fact that what the government said is wrong. It's not possible. You know, if we can establish the freedom to have an investigation, then we'll find out what brought the buildings down. We don't need to debate whether it was thermite, whether it was directed energy weapons, whether it was this, whether it was that. where it was controlled demolition. All sorts of things people putting out there, and you know, then taking a position and arguing with other people, divide and conquer. All we know about 9/11 is that it's not possible that it was 19 Arabs with plastic box cutters that brought down three buildings with two aircraft. We know it's not possible. We know it's not possible for the buildings to collapse at free fall speed from a kerosene fire. We know it's not possible. That's all we need to know, and that's all we actually do know. You know, and all the speculation and conjecture over what it was and what brought the buildings down and who did this and who did that, it's all noise. All of it is noise, and it's designed to be that way just to keep us arguing over details we can't possibly prove. It all depends on what you want to believe. And again, there you've got the weaponization of so-called truth against freedom. Because, you know, it's about what we know, which is the fact that the government's lying. It's the same with Christchurch. What we know is that the government's lying, and we've got it on video that the government's lying right there. We don't even have to prove it. Even more than 9/11, we know the government's lying because it's right there on film. That guy dressed in red and that silver Toyota Will VS that leaves halfway through, that we get seen wave through a police roadblock on a random piece of news footage. I mean, that in itself, that we'd even have that random piece of news footage to go along with it. This is an absolute gift. If the truth community was actually about truth and about anything to do with real activism and anything to do with freedom, they would have grabbed this with both hands and waved it in the face of everybody. But nobody did it because everyone was too scared they would lose their views or they get some downward flags from people. Everyone wanted to believe it was a hoax because it's far more romantic to think that way. It's far more adventurous, far more mysterious. You can grab the popcorn and go, ooh, another hoax, ooh, you know. They're not prepared to act. They're not prepared to actually do something and stand up and make their voices heard and realize that this is a serious situation. And what this is about is freedom, and freedom comes from activism. You know, and even all those Christians out there waiting for the world to end, well, Jesus was an activist, folks. You know, if you're out there following this guy, he was an anarchist and he was an activist. So perhaps you should follow suit and do what he said and do the right thing and walk those footsteps. Perhaps we'd change things, you know.
Excellent points all. Very well said, Max. And you mentioned some of the long-term engineering, social engineering in the U.S., COINTELPRO, that showed how much this had been going on, at least since the mid-century, with a very focused agenda to control the narrative of what the citizens believe. And I have to wonder just how much you could have even predicted, and even with knowing all of that history of COINTELPRO, MKUltra, and all of these deceptions, the USS Liberty and 9/11, could you even have predicted, though, this current agenda we're finding targeted at our children, this sexualization of our children, which is suddenly, from what I notice, only within a few years' time. I mean, perhaps in Northern Europe they were experimenting earlier, or where you live in Australia, but from what I understand, I mean, this has really come about just in a couple of years, and it's an insane acceleration. Now they're trying to change gender of children who haven't even reached puberty, give puberty suppression drugs, and everyone's being conditioned to question their gender. But any parent who stands up against it, anyone who suggests to question it is demonized. There's no questioning why these institutions, these schools, are conditioning. You know, why are they getting involved? This should be something that comes to a person on their own notion as they have already reached maturity, if at all. And could you have even predicted how this suddenly came about here at this time period, Max?
Yeah, it's pretty rapid. I mean, we could see it coming. We knew that was part of the plan. They've been sort of working at it for a while. I mean, if you go back and look at the pop industry, look at it in the 70s, you know, when rock music first came out and, you know, guys with long hairs sort of wearing, you know, women's type of clothing. You look at Led Zeppelin, look at the way Robert Plant used to dress way back in the early days. He used to wear those little frilly tops and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, it's been an ongoing thing.
Right, it's and been Brian an ongoing Eno, program. David Bowie.
Yeah, I mean, it's just got to the point now that they've been able to be comfortable with it, you know, with the whole sexual freedom revolution, the feminist movement and all the stuff that's come about in the last 5 or 6 years. They're able to just really push it. In the last 2 years, like you say, it's just snowballed. But, you know, yeah, we could see it coming. We knew this was going to be the plan all along. It's just that it just seems like it's happening so quickly now. But really, it's been an ongoing thing since the late 60s. They've had this plan in effect. It's just that we're now at the end of it, so we're seeing that transitional period where it's all taking place. You know, and the kids, as I said before, they've got no reference point, so they're just sort of going along with it because they've got no reference point. And most of the time, their parents are too busy with other things. And, you know, half of the parents out there actually think it's progressive to think this way. You know, it's kind of a little bit of a feather in their bonnet. Oh, yes, well, my little boy's going through a transition. Oh, yes, well, my little girl's doing whatever. You know, they wear it like a badge on their sleeve. It's like their kid's having ADD or something. You know, these invented sicknesses that they give children now. Anyway, oh, he's thinking outside the box. You know, we can't control him. ADHD, whatever. Give him suppression drugs. And then the parents get off on it. They actually enjoy the fact that their child is special because he's on drugs, because he has a problem, you know. So you can just look at how society is programmed, brother. It's a sad thing. But I'm not surprised at all to see how much people are accepting it, how much young parents are accepting it. It's almost like a fashion accessory for them, you know. That's just the way people have been programmed to think, unfortunately.
Yes, well, it certainly is. Coming as a shock for people who are my age or older, Generation X and baby boomers, when they do look up from their own lives once in a while. But I understand that a lot of schools are making it policy that the parents aren't even authorized to look into what their children are being taught, look at their textbooks, be around them and look at what they're doing with their homework assignments. This is starting to be something that the school system is shunning and condemning. So they know they're guilty of a strong amount of relinquishing control from the parent to the state. And that's really where all of this is going for the future, isn't it? Destroying the nuclear family?
Oh, yeah, and it's been part of the plan for a long time as well. They started that way back in the 50s and 60s as well, the destruction of the nuclear family. You know, women's lib and all that sort of stuff, getting women out to work, not to give women equal rights, but to get them away from their children, you know, to separate the mother and the father a little bit more, the husband and the wife a little bit more, and to get the kids in the charge of the state. And so the states, they're looking after them from when they're 4 or 5 years old, or even earlier because they're put into preschool because both parents are working. So, yeah, I mean, it just gets the whole family unit to fall apart. And, of course, you replace the parents with television as well because they're so busy trying to keep, you know, make ends meet and maintain the household while they're working. So when they get home, they place the kids in front of the TV, and the TV programs them and educates them. And so that means there's never any real bond that develops between the children and their parents. And so the children grow up, don't, you know, don't really feel that they have any real value. And they don't even know that that's what they're looking for in their lives because they don't know that that bond should be there, which is why they take to Snapchat and Facebook and Instagram and all these things which they can get likes on because they just want to have value, which is why everybody wants a soapbox because they just want to be heard. They just want someone to recognize the fact that they have some form of value because they never got that from their parents because their bond never developed between them because their parents were too busy working, trying to pay the bills, and the kids were simply put in front of a TV. You know, and you can't even blame the parents for not allowing that bond to develop because the parents thought they were doing the right thing by working and providing for the family, you know. But it's a scam. The whole thing is just one big scam. And, you know, the young minds today have been truly brutalized by this system. It's so sad to see. But, you know, there's still hope for us. I mean, a lot of people are getting, a lot of people are waking up. There's so much happening now. Like, they blew so much with Christchurch. They really blew it, and a lot of other things they've really messed up. And so they've had to kind of move a lot quicker now than I think they had planned to. And as a result, they're stumbling, and more people are waking up. So that's good to see as well, you know?
Yes, well, like you say, that local activism, I mean, people getting unplugged from the system, materialism, and the technology that rules their life, the condensed way of living, packed in with such a dense population, get out to where you're living, a spread out environment more, get to know the locals, and just build a community of people who clearly aren't buying any of this social engineering. So you just have to go out there and create these communities in the future, and I guess reduce your dependence on technology and try to be as self-reliant as possible.
Yeah. The technology is what's leading us into this smart trap, unfortunately. I mean, technology is a double-edged sword. You know, it can be used for good, but it's unfortunately leading us into this smart system. I mean, I've even noticed with emails now, when you get a short email, the email program will give you an opportunity of adding a response, you know. Like, it'll, oh, you know, no thanks, or what do you want to do here, or rah, 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 you know, are any of these suitable for you? So I don't have to think about responding. All these little helpers, all these little assistants to do things for you. This is the way they do it. This is the way they atrophy your brain. This is the way they get you dependent upon all this sort of stuff which is external to yourself. And it locks you into that system. And we've got to be careful. We've really got to be careful where we're being led with all this, you know, because it's, you know, technology, it can be used for great things, but it's not. This whole smart grid and the way people are being led into it and becoming dependent upon it, it's actually creating a technological barrier between ourselves and the world around us and everyday actions and everyday lives. Now, like you were saying earlier, soon you won't be able to spend, you won't be able to buy food, you won't be able to do anything if you don't have digital currency. And that's a very dangerous situation to be in. But that's the way it's going, you know, and it's all sort of getting moved onto smartphones and smart this, smart that. Interesting, when you look up the etymology of the word smart, it's got nothing to do with intelligence. It actually derives from pain. You know, when you get someone snaps you with a whip and that's smarts, that's where they got it from. Tricky, huh? Hmm. So smart technology, what's it really for? Is there to cause pain towards you? Yeah, and the way they did it was like, you know, sharp as a whip became, you know, like the crack of a whip, it smarts, and that became, you know, sharp as a whip became witty, became clever, and we started using it as clever, but really it means pain. So they kind of tell you what they're doing with all this stuff.
Yes, whip you in line and whip you back into compliance.
Yeah, that's what it's all about, brother. So they get you to wear the collar and tie to work as well, yeah? Who wears collars and cuffs and a tie around their neck? What's that all about, you know? Who wears right. collars and cuffs? Were workers or slaves?
Right. And, I mean, yeah, just keeping it close to home and like we're saying here, building your own communities, that really is the answer. But as far as the bigger picture, these elites are really trying to consolidate and control with more and more centralization everything they can. I mean, we're seeing progression in, well, of course, there's always these economic wars we get told about as far as the superpowers, so China, Russia, United States, and, of course, the European Union. It clearly is not in the best interest of the European nations. But with geopolitics, we're constantly getting these wars. Instead of, like you say, focusing on the problems at home, our homeless situation, our ability to feed and raise families, incentives for that, and just plenty of work for people to live well. But no, we have everything spent on the wrong things. And now we're getting a lot of warning signs about a serious future war again. I mean, I know this has been on and off for the longest time. Israel wants a large war with Iran. It was the last country on the list when General Wesley Clark announced the project for the New American Century. Originally, 7 countries in 5 years. With Iran, the last on the list, we know about the Greater Israel Project as well. So both the United States military-industrial complex and Israel have strong motives against Iran. Now, is it possible that it could actually be finally about to heat up, would you say?
Well, it could be. I mean, they're really pushing for it. They've been trying for a while. They tried with that ridiculous tanker incident a couple of months ago, and nobody bought that. And they tried with something else after that, but nobody bought that. And so now they're trying with this attack against Saudi Arabia. They're just trying everything they can to kickstart this war with Iran. And they all want it. I mean, Trump wants it. Israel wants it. Everyone's wants it to happen. So, yeah, we can just hope that it doesn't. That's all we can do is hope and hope that people will see it. Because, I mean, no one in their right mind actually believes that Iran sent that missile into Saudi Arabia. I mean, this would be the last thing the Iranians would do, especially while the United States is parked there saying, come on, you know, pick it up. It's like the United States sort of parks there and throws the gun on the ground and tells them to pick it up. You know, pick it up. Oh, you saw him. He had a gun, you know. So, you know, they can just, you know, beat you up. So that's what this is all about. But, you know, they're pushing it. They're really pushing it. I just hope that the people of the world see it for what it is and rally against the governments and don't let them do it. Because it will be terrible if they go in and bomb Iran. It's a beautiful country and it hasn't gone to war with anyone in over 270 years. There's no reason to attack it. It's not a threat. You know, and with what they're doing to every other country, what they've done to Yemen, I mean, it's absolutely disgraceful. So, you know, if anything should be happening, Trump should be going in there to stop Saudi terrorists from terrorizing Yemen the way they're doing. You know, Saudi Arabia is saying Iran is threatening the entire world economy through its actions. No, Saudi Arabia and Israel are threatening the entire world economy, and they always have been.
And many are convinced that China and Russia and potentially China would both back Iran, and so that definitely could trigger a war that virtually all countries are in, another world war.
I mean, well, that's why they need to get someone like Saudi Arabia to do it, because you know, Israel can't do it, they'll get in trouble. America can't do it, they'll get in trouble. But the Saudis, I mean, this is an Arab nation. It's just the Arabs fighting with each other sort of thing, you know. Even though the Iranians aren't Arabs, they're Persians. People in the West don't ever see that. They just see everybody with brown skin and a turban as being an Arab. So, you know, it's very clever the way they're doing it. But if they're going to kickstart the war, I mean, it's just the fact that it is Saudi Arabia that is rattling the sabers and claiming a missile attack against Saudi Arabia. It sort of gives a lot of credibility to the fact that this one may actually go ahead. It may actually start because it's the only possible way they could safely start a war with Iran would be through Saudi Arabia. Then Saudi Arabia can start the war and America can simply come in and go, oh, look, we didn't want to, but we've got to go and back our friends, you know. I mean, and please have sympathy for the Saudis. I mean, look what they just sent this missile which killed civilians. Oh, dear. Did it kill civilians? Did it? Just like what Saudi Arabia's been doing in Yemen for the last 4 or 5 years in the longest bombing campaign in the history of war, you know, all with weapons supplied by the United States and Donald Trump to the tune of about $1.2 billion worth per year. So, you know, you can see the double standards here, but it's really the only way they could do it. They'd have to go in there. That way Israel and America can look like, well, we didn't want to do it, but we have to go in and help our ally. And after all, our ally is only defending themselves against an unprovoked attack. The way they always play it, you know. You think they'd come up with a new script.
Yes. Well, so, yeah, it seems you could see how it wouldn't be too easy without all countries getting involved, unless you have an isolated proxy army like Saudi Arabia. That does make a lot of sense. And well, as far as where we could see things going outside of the war agendas, we're trying to resist this technology. I mean, we're talking about, you know, trying to even grow your own food and everything. And well, we see so much in the environment, though, we have to avoid. I mean, the GMOs, different countries are in different levels against all of that. The U.S. is very behind and very much in a corporatist sort of mindset, not wanting to resist these. I know there's more progress in Europe. I'm not aware of the attitude toward GMOs in Australia, where you are there.
Well, they're kind of just the same as America, really. They don't really care. Mm-hmm. The Australian government is saying, oh, it's all safe, it's all perfectly safe. We're Australians, we don't care what they say, we're stronger than them, you know, that whole attitude. We're better, we don't care what the Europeans think. They're always been fussy, you know. That's the way it's promoted, you know, the whole concept of the lucky country, you know. So, yeah, we don't care what they say. We know best for what's good for us, you know. So, you know, I lovingly call the country Apathralia, because they're a really apathetic bunch, and mostly they just believe what the government tells them, unfortunately.
Hmm. And that, I mean, in addition to avoiding the GMOs, there's, of course, the nuclear fallout of Fukushima, for that matter. I'm hearing now they can no longer store a lot of this nuclear water that's gushing out. They just have to release just this huge, unprecedented number of gallons of radioactive water into the sea, and they're hoping it just dissipates. And I mean, from what I understand, those particles, I mean, it might spread out more, but it's not going to dissipate in the sense that it can't still get into your body and remain the way these radioactive particles can be a serious detriment to all life. Even that's why with the tampering, even with GMOs, I mean, they don't realize the long-term effects, the chain reaction in nature they cause with all of this. But so much of this is just things we can find out about that are just out of our control. And I don't know, some of those things, you know, it seems like it could only get someone down and not encourage them to do what we're trying to discuss here. But it is good to have all of that information.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is. I mean, it's a huge thing what they've done. They've really interfered with the food chain to a ridiculous degree. You know, they're changing the structure of everything. And even when you look at it, you could apply that to us as well. They're genetically modifying us. They're genetically modifying everything. But with the GMO food, I mean, splicing fish genes into potatoes and things, I mean, what for? What is the excuse in this? It makes no sense at all. So, yeah, they're messing with everything through the GMO situation. But like I said, not just the food, with us as well and all other life forms. Everything is being genetically modified. Everything's being moved into a new phase. And, you know, causes you to question who's really behind this, you know. I mean, who benefits from all this being done? Certainly not people. I can't see how anybody in the human race benefits from any of this being done. So, you know, it's interesting wondering what the real agenda is here, you know.
That is an excellent, even these power-hungry, money-hungry elites, you can't imagine that they would want to see a future planet they can't really even live on, and that the plants and animals are no longer sustaining the way they once were. So it does make you curious who's at the top of this control pyramid. That is an interesting way to put it in perspective. And now we have this weaponized immigration, Max, especially on the Western world, you know, the developed, technologically relatively advanced Western world has, you know, even quotas on immigration all across Europe, across America. I believe you have a good amount in Australia there as well. Where they're trying to level the playing field, perhaps, across the globe to usher in a one-world government, new world order. That's the only thing I can figure in the long term, what they expect to accomplish with that, this immigration agenda. If you would give me your thoughts on that.
Well, the merging of all the races, if you have no connection to your original race, then you have no connection to your real heritage. So you have no real loyalties, you know. You have no real need to preserve your country. I mean, if you're, you know, an American or, you know, an Australian or Swedish or whatever, if suddenly a couple of generations from now you're multicultural, you're from all countries, well, you've got no real need to want to preserve your national heritage or your national pride. And, I mean, if you just go traveling now, go traveling around the world, and it doesn't matter where you go, everywhere is the same as everywhere else. You can go to major capital cities and you'll find all the same coffee shops, all the same little sidewalk cafes, all the same type of eating stores. You might find slightly different food depending on your different countries. You know, they like to have some pride in their national food, but that's about it. Everything else is the same. So everything is being homogenized, except Israel, of course. The Jews will not marry into other people. I'm not allowed to say that word on YouTube, am I? We'll get in trouble. But they won't interbreed with anybody else, but they're interbreeding the entire rest of the world into one race, one homogenized race, and turning the entire rest of the world into one big amusement park, basically. I mean, like I said, everywhere you go, it's the same as everywhere else, and it's gotten more and more that way as the years go by. You get the same food, you get the same shops, you get the same fashions, you get the same people, you get the same looks in people's eyes. It's the same everywhere you go. So that's what it's all about. You know, if you can, you know, take people's national pride away from them, take their culture, take their heritage away from them, and they have no loyalties, they have nothing to fight for, they have nothing to stand up for. I mean, if you're not an Australian, if you're a mixture between Indian and African and Australian and British and a whole bunch of other stuff, and you're kind of a mongrel there, and you've grown up through this, well, you're not going to have any real loyalty to your country, because it's not your country. You know, it's just a country. It's just the place that you live. So, you know, in some ways, you know, people who want to see all the borders break down and all that sort of stuff, that's a good thing. I mean, we'll see that, only we won't see it. We'll see the borders all break down culturally, but they'll just get more and more stringent if you want to cross them because of the fear of terrorism and all this sort of stuff. So, you know, people who want to see all these border breakdowns and want to see one race, well, they're going to see that. But it's going to be a race that is bereft of a cultural identity, because it'll be a race with no culture, because if you merge all cultures together, then you have no culture. You know, and you know, when you go to Germany, you want to see Germany. When you go to France, you want to see France. You go to Indonesia, you want to see the Indonesian way of life, you know. You don't want to go there and see McDonald's and all the same things as you see everywhere else. But that's what they're doing. They're turning everywhere into everywhere else. And people are just sort of unfortunately going along with it. But there's a reason, you know. Just as I said, two races, the Goyim and the controllers, and that's the way it's going. And the plan has been in effect for a long time. And they put the plan out to genocide the peoples of Europe via mass migration in 1928. The Koldenhove-Kalergi plan was put forth. And that's what they're doing. That's what they're doing right now.
I also think of Aldous Huxley's Brave New World. And from what I understand, he and relatives, friends of his, were involved in societies that were very much a forward-thinking, elitist sort of circles. So, I mean, that was put into place as well as the Kalergi plan, and probably about 100 years ago now.
Yeah, yeah. So it's been an ongoing thing. I mean, they've had this plan in motion for a long, long time. But, of course, you try to tell people that, and I know it's just a conspiracy. You know, and they tell you, they've told you what they're going to do, what they plan to do, and they're doing it. I mean, they're getting away with it for the most part by keeping people distracted with all these other theories of conflict. But again, and underneath it all is the smart grid rolling out through all this. So, I mean, that's I think, a lot of what they keep the whole Palestine situation going for as well, because it's a situation we'll never heal. But it's great for distracting us, so we don't notice the smart grid, we don't notice the Kalergi plan, we don't notice all the other things they're doing. So, you know, very, very long-term plans these people have. But we're seeing the whole lot come to fruition now, but it's a bit of a mishmash. You know, they're sort of stumbling a lot with trying to roll it all out. But we're seeing it all happening now. I think the world's going to be a very different world by 2025, certainly by 2030. Even by next year. I mean, what we've seen this year, it's been over the top even. You know, I knew we were going to have a lot of changes this year. I said at the beginning of the year I thought it was going to be a big year, and it certainly hasn't let me down. But I think by 2025, we'll probably find ourselves, if people don't stand up and say something or do something about it, we'll very likely find ourselves in the cashless grid by 2025. And by 2030, they're going to want to merge everybody with AI, you know, and they may even get away with it. But then we've got all other sorts of things in the wind as well. We've got grand solar minimums coming. So, you know, it's anybody's guess what's going to happen. You know, predicting the future is a very difficult thing to do because there could be natural occurrences, whether they're natural, whether they're not so natural, that may change things anyway, regardless of what anybody else does. And I speculate on that as well. I mean, I've gone through history a lot lately, whether there are a series of regular cataclysmic events that happen, like even as regularly as every 200 or 300 years. So I'm sure there are ones on longer cycles as well, but perhaps these events are speeding up. And perhaps a lot of what we're seeing in the world today is simply a theater of distraction, so we don't notice all this. And they can just wait for one of these events to unfold and then start again from that point, you know?
Well, I can certainly see the gender identity agenda, this sexualization of the children being a good distraction, like you say, as well, because they're totally focused on themselves. They're totally immersed in looking inward and trying to find themselves, just struggling to live normally under what conditions they want, just like everyone else, at much less being able to look around them at what's going on. So, I mean, that does seem to be like a good time if they're having trouble rolling out a lot of this, like you say, to keep people distracted, to buy a little more time, perhaps. That could be one other purpose that serves, aside from furthering the dissolution of the nuclear family. But definitely, we have to try to remove our technology from the whole system. We have to disconnect and live the way we think is right. Because controlling the whole narrative, that's what they're trying to do at this point. How you're supposed to want to live, or what you consider life to be. That's falling into question. Just how you're expected to be satisfied in what you have to experience for a life, right? It's being happy in your slavery.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's why they've had to, you know, remove things and put them all into the virtual worlds. You know, people used to want things to be happy in life. Now they can just have virtual things that they don't really have, but they just think they have, you know. And even the whole transgenderization of the children and everything that's happening, this is all part of keeping the population down. I mean, if you look at the Georgia Guidestones, you know, keep the population, maintain population under 500 million, how do you intend to do that? I mean, if people are going to be having sex and breeding and stuff, you've got to get into a point where they don't really want to have sex, but they're not really attracted to the other gender. And so that's why you do it. You introduce gender confusion and all the stuff they're doing. You know, so a lot of the kids, I mean, they're so confused. You're not seeing normal relationships developing between boys and girls anymore. So, you know, it all supports the whole depopulation program. It all supports what we see on the Georgia Guidestones. It supports the notion that there are cyclic cataclysms and that the Georgia Guidestones have been left there for the next cycle, and there's something about to happen to wipe this one out, to cull this population. You know, and there's every indication that this has happened time and time again. You know, history has been completely fabricated, I would suggest, and there's every indication that that's true. You can find that out simply by traveling around the world and looking at things yourself. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's another one happening. We were heading for a grand solar minimum. And, you know, they don't want the people that are left after this minimum, after this cataclysm, whatever there it is that's happening, I don't think they really want them to be able to repopulate the Earth. They want to be able to do it themselves by whatever means they've got available to do it. I mean, probably they've got the plan already in motion. They've already got their plan ready to go for when whatever does occur happens. But I don't think they want too many of this population left. So if there is some event on the surface of this earth that wipes out a lot of people, you know, this whole transgenderization will very much help that along, you know, because the people that are left won't be able to breed. They won't really have the inclination to breed. They'll be too sexually confused. And, you know, I think it's all part of the same plan, brother. I really do. And I wouldn't be surprised if they do this over and over again. I mean, I speculate whether these cycles happen frequently, even whether the tech that we're using now is not even new tech. They just roll it out to us a little bit at a time, you know, create the concept of something like the Industrial Revolution so we can see it all growing and rising. And we get to the point that we've got these smartphones and these scrying mirrors and all this stuff that we've got now. And then they just do a reset and it all starts again. How the reset happens is another question. You know, whether it's done through technology, whether there's far more going on here than we are aware of, or whether it's simply a solar thing done through solar minimums and it's a natural cycle. I mean, we don't know. But I think there's a lot more going on here than what we believe to be true about this world anyway.
Well, I think some of your predictions are very insightful. And I would also suggest taking away guns from all citizens of all nations. Wouldn't that have to be at some year in the near future as well? I mean, where would you predict that would lie?
It's going to be difficult for them to take all guns from all citizens in all nations. They're going to have to do it a little bit at a time. I mean, they'll do it in the United States through what we're seeing now, through the rollout of these new checks that they're doing now, and everything that we talked about earlier, you know, how it all ties together. You know, they can gradually filter that out. They just got to get a few of the people and, you know, all the conspiratorially minded people, because these are obviously dangerous, unstable people, which is why they stage all these events and, you know, get everybody reporting about it. So, you know, but they'll never probably be able to really disarm the United States, but they don't have to completely, because a lot of people in the United States won't ever use them anyway. I mean, that surprises me, really, that I have people in the United States, you know, saying, well, what about our Second Amendment rights and rah, rah, rah? Well, you know, if you read the Second Amendment and you read the Constitution, you know, the Second Amendment was for when the enemy was in the gates, because the only people who were going to be able to take the country back was the people themselves. And, well, you know, the enemy's been in the gates for a long time, Josh. You know, Richard. The enemy's been in the gates for a long time. So, I mean, really, anybody should have used the guns 100 years ago. You know, if they were going to worry about the Second Amendment, well, how much are they going to let the government push before they invoke the Second Amendment now? No one seems to be using it, so, you know, it doesn't really matter because no one's going to use them anyway. So that's the thing. You know, but they won't be able to do it in all nations, and it's got to be a gradual process. I mean, they're in the process at the moment of turning the first world into the second world, and they're turning the third world into the first world, and they're turning the first, you know, like reducing the first world into the second world. So, you know, if you look at Peru and you look at the Philippines and all these cultures, these guys are about in the 1980s or early 1990s at the moment, compared to where our culture and technology is. So they'll sort of do them later. You know, they work out which model works, and the first world gets raised to a certain point. Everybody in the third world wants to emulate that because they only see what's on TV. Then you collapse the first world by transferring all the wealth out of the first world into the third world and raise that up to be the first world. And that's when you take them off at that point. You know, and all the world just think it's an economic situation. I mean, as they're rolling out the police state in each country and disarming it, we end up in civil war or whatever, it'll just be the economic situation. That's the way the media will play it. So all the people in the Philippines, all the people who hate the United States for all the stuff the United States has done, they'll love it. They'll love to see the United States fall. They'll love to see all the strife and hardship. They're not going to stand up and help you guys when it all turns pear-shaped, because all the damage the United States has done to the world, so they're going to enjoy seeing it. You know, but then, and they're going to be getting all the wealth that comes from the collapse of the United States, so they're going to be feeling pretty good about themselves, and then they'll get led into a situation of complacency where they can be picked off the way the people in the United States were. So, you know, it's all part and parcel to the same thing, but it's a gradual process, and it's a kind of like a relay race, the way they've got to do it. It won't be global, the whole thing, all at once. That couldn't possibly happen. It'd be too much of a shock. And the world wouldn't wear it. You've got to appeal to people psychologically so that people like to see another country fall, especially the United States. People are going to love to see the United States fall. And so that's why no one's going to be sympathetic to it at all. and they'll just accept it, and they'll think, well, our time has finally come, so it's all good, you know. So they won't realize they're being set up for the next fall, because they're doing now to you what they just did to the United States. It's just that it's a gradual process.
Well, a lot of economists' articles I've read predicting the near future, it looks like we're in for a global recession followed by an extended United States recession. So the U.S. will take the longest, if ever, to fully recover. Could this be when it occurs? Do you see the U.S. possibly going down, beginning with this economic downfall we've already entered into?
Yeah, I do. And I think it will all see the rollout of the Chinese One Belt, One Road trade agreement and trade system, and which will, you know, move us into the whole Chinese social crediting system, which will eventually happen all around the world. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the way they're going to do it. The whole One Belt, One Road initiative that China is implementing, which is the new world trade system, yeah, it'll happen just as they finish that and get everything up and running when all the infrastructure's there. Then we'll see the global recession happening. And, yeah, because it's all contrived. It's all manufactured. The recessions are all manufactured by the bank. But the China's building all this infrastructure now. When I was in Spain last year, they were building new railways right across Spain to come out of China for the new One Belt, One Road system. So it's happening right across Europe. It's happening everywhere. This is what we're seeing a lot of the conflict in Saudi Arabia and Yemen and everything about as well, because they desperately need to maintain control of the Straits of Aden, because the Straits of Aden are an incredibly important shipping port, and you can't have any, you know, free nation of Yemen controlling those straits. Not for the One Belt, One Road system to work. So it all ties in with the same thing. It's all part and parcel to the same thing. So, yeah, the timing will be impeccable, but China will be there to save the day, just as it all happens. And at that point, the United States will lose control of the global reserve currency, which is why the United States will be the one to suffer most and have a longer recession than anybody else, because the United States, I mean, the only thing that really keeps the standard of living so high in the United States at the moment is because the dollar, the US dollar, is the global reserve currency. But once the Chinese One Belt, One Road system comes online, there'll be no need for that to happen and for it to maintain that position. And that'll be the end of the United States as we know it.
Wow. Well, that is quite a lot for people. Thank you for all of that information. And as much as I'm not looking forward to you being correct, it does seem possible that things could move that way globally in the near future. Again, locally is where we need to keep our focus to stay positive and work with those elements which we can control in our immediate environment and those local to us. Is that perhaps the best advice we can leave listeners with?
I would say so, brother. I mean, plant food, permaculture. Look what they did in Cuba when they found out the food trucks were going to stop and the food chips were going to stop. They turned the whole place into a food forest. You know, we could take control of our lives now. We could take control of this system now. But we need the power of community to do it. So, you know, get to know yourself, get to know your neighbors, and start making a stand on the ground. Change things locally, because that's where you're going to make a difference. It doesn't really matter what the whole international theatrics is doing. You know, if we change things on the ground where we live, that's where the change will come from. And if you're going to join the military, don't. If anybody out there is thinking of being a soldier, don't. And if you know anybody who's in the military, convince them to quit. That would really help. And if you work for the government, quit. That's what everybody should do.
Well, thank you. Those are some great pieces of advice. And I look forward to the next time we get a chance to chat. You're back and forth all over the U.S. right now. You're going on some speaking engagements, are you?
Yeah. I just did Philly last weekend, Philadelphia. I'm in L.A. at the moment, but I just did Philadelphia last weekend, and now I'm back in L.A. Then I've got to go to Mount Shasta next weekend and do a talk up there, the Avatars of the Earth Gathering. And then I'm going over to a wedding in Spokane, Washington. Then I was going to be going to an event in Denver, but that's not going to happen because it's not the type of event that I thought it was. And just be the gig in Mount Shasta next weekend, then a wedding in Spokane. And then I have a couple of weeks off and I'll head back to Australia. And I'll still be getting the shows. I've got to miss out on a couple of shows this month. I'll get one out this week, but I'll probably miss out on one next week and probably the following week as well. But I did warn people it was going to be a little bit intermittent while I was away traveling, but I'm kind of all over the place, east to west and central and all over the United States at the moment. It's tricky to know what time zone I'm in.
Absolutely. Well, I hope all of your travels go well. I'm glad that you don't get too much difficulty with that, considering all the activism you do, certainly from the TSA here in the U.S. I certainly hope you have a decent treatment. And I don't know, so then you'll see yourself back in Australia after that. And you said you see yourself returning, though, to South America. You really enjoy the time you spend there.
I do. I really like the time in the jungle, and South America really does need our attention. But I've got a lot of stuff there in the jungle as well I want to go and collect and pick up. I left a lot of stuff back there when I was there last time. I had planned to get back there earlier, but a series of events, I didn't get back there. Most of it's probably all gone by now. It's probably all moldy, gone back to the soil, the way things happen in the jungle. But there's a good chance I'll be back in the United States next year. I've got to go to Acapulco in February to speak at an Acapulco. And then I think I may have a couple of talks around the United States, around Philadelphia or something in April. So I've got to work that out as well. And but I'll be doing a tour next year. That may be the last one for a while. Now, I have been saying that for a while as well, but I'm thinking 2020 might be the last year that I go traveling for a while. The miles, it really does get to me. But thanks for asking me on as well, Rod. It's been a pleasure to come and chat to you. And don't despair with all this. I mean, we will get through it. It's all about the trials and tribulations. If we can lead by example in what we do, then maybe we can reach the kids and maybe we can show them the future they've been led into. But at least, I mean, you and I and a few other people, when our kids look at us and ask us what we were doing when the slavery system was being built, well, we can say, well, we tried. At least we can say we tried. Yeah, we'll have that grace at least.
Those are some brilliant final thoughts and very noble. Well, thank you. And I do look forward to the next time we can chat. So I hope to have you on again. But thank you so much for coming on Revision Media. And yeah, I hope you stay safe. The jungle, though, must be a bit like returning home for you. I imagine it must really help you reconnect with nature and what everything's really all about.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. I feel free the moment my foot touches the tarmac in Peru. It's an amazing place. It's just a different sort of a world there. There's something very special about that country. Yeah, I'd be happy to come and have a chat to you anytime, brother. Maybe we'll be able to do the next show without all the technical problems. You never know.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Maybe we'll try this connection method to start, and hopefully it'll be a nice, smooth chat. Well, thank you so much, and have a great night, and enjoy the rest of your travels, Max.
Thank you, Richard. Bye-bye.
Cheers, brother. And thank you, all the listeners. I appreciate you tuning in. And we will speak again soon. Until then, transcend the construct. Regards.